Beloved Bhagwan, Rinzai once went to visit one of Ungan's disciples, Anzan. On that occasion, he asked Anzan, "What is the white cow of the dewy ground?" Anzan responded by saying, "Moo, moo." Rinzai commented, "You are dumb." Anzan said, "How about you?" Rinzai observed, "You animal." On one occasion, Rinzai asked a nun, "Welcome or ill come?" The nun shouted, "Go on, go on, speak," cried Rinzai, taking up his stick. Again, the nun shouted. Rinzai hit her. On another occasion, Rinzai asked Lo Pu, "Up to now, it has been the custom for some men to use the stick and others to give a shout. Which comes closer to the heart of the recipient?" "Neither," responded Lo Pu. "What does come close?" asked Rinzai. Lo Pu shouted. The master hit him.
Manisha, the deeper I look into Zen, many things become very crystal clear. One is its absolute uniqueness in the world of religions. In comparison to Zen, all the religions look like entertainment. Formal ritualities, social conditionings, Zen goes through them like a sword, cutting all the ropes that bind you. It has no ritual. It has no mantra. It has no way of sacrificing anything to anyone. The very basis of sacrifice, God Himself, is missing in Zen. Without God, you cannot create rituals, sacrifices. Without God, all your religions will look absolutely meaningless. If God is removed, what will be Hinduism? And what will be Islam? And what will be Christianity? With the removal of a hypothesis, the whole edifice of those religions falls completely to the ground. It is a single hypothesis. And a hypothesis is not a reality. A hypothesis is only man's projection. It is true, man wants some security. It is true that man wants some safety. He is insecure in this vast universe, too small and too alone, too helpless. And there is always death. Any moment it can knock at your doors. Out of all these insecurities, anxieties, fears, has arisen the hypothesis of God. And people cling to it, because without it their life will become such an anxiety, they will go insane. Taking God away from them, you are taking their very sanity, their very intelligence, their mind, their whole conditioning of millions of years. And according to me, unless you are able to throw away the hypothesis of God and heaven and hell, all projections, you cannot be an authentic seeker. You have to drop all that which has made the so-called religions around the world. Their base is the same. They may create much theology around the hypothesis. They may fight with each other upon their theologies. But essentially, they are all same. Their gods may have different faces, but the God is there. Their hell and heaven may have different climates, but they are there. And they go on arguing on that which is imaginary. And they think this argumentation, they have continued for centuries, is of some importance. In fact, it is an effort to deviate man's mind. Fight upon the non-essentials, so nobody raises the question, nobody has the time to ask about the essentials. Zen is pure essence, unpolluted, uncorrupted by any non-essential. You cannot take away anything from Zen, because it is only a declaration of your self-nature. Neither you can add anything to Zen, because anything added will be artificial. And Zen is absolutely in favor of nature. It is not against entertainment. In fact, Zen is only capable of laughing of entertainment, but its entertainment is not different from its enlightenment. The very quality of entertainment differs. J. Krishnamurti's last words: a man who struggled for 90 years his last words have some great meaning. One of my friend was present there. Krishnamurti lamented his whole life. He lamented that people have taken me as an entertainment. They come to listen to me. There are people who have listened to him for 50 years continuously. And still they are the same people as they had come for the first time to listen to him. Naturally, it is annoying and irritating that the same kind of people, the same people, most of them I know, because J. Krishnamurti used to come only one time for 2-3 weeks to Bombay. And slowly all his followers in Bombay became acquainted with me. And they all were sad about the point that what should be done, how we can make Krishnamurti happy. And the reason was, Krishnamurti only talked. But never gave any devices in which whatever he is talking becomes an experience. It was totally his fault. Whatever he was saying was absolutely right, but he was not creating the right climate, the right milieu in which it can become a seed. Of course, he was very much disappointed with humanity that there is not a single person who has become enlightened through his teachings, and his teachings have all the seeds, but he never prepares the ground. Zen does not deny entertainment the way J. Krishnamurti condemned as his last testament to the world, that entertainment is not religion. That's true. But enlightenment can be vast enough to include entertainment in it. Enlightenment can be multidimensional. It can include laughter, it can include love, it can include beauty, it can include creativity. There is nothing to prevent it from the world and transforming the world in a more poetic place, in a more beautiful garden, everything can be brought to a better grace. Zen does not talk about great principles. That has to be noted. It simply creates the device and leaves you to find the way out. Obviously, it has been immensely successful. Not a single Zen master has ever lamented that my disciples have not listened to me, that I have been an utterly disappointed failure humanity. Has betrayed me. Not a single Zen master even mentions for once if something does not succeed, that only means your device was not right. You have not looked into the person and into his potential rightly. Perhaps your device was good for somebody else, but not for this person. Zen has only created devices, leaving you completely free to find the truth. And it is strange, more people have become enlightened through Zen than any other religion of the world. And the other religions are very big, and Zen is a very small stream. You can see these small things, and a master uses them in such a way that they start pointing to the moon. Rinzai once went to visit one of Ungan's disciples, Ansan. On that occasion, he asked Ansan, "What is the white cow of the dewy ground?" "It is one of Zen koans. It does not mean anything. It simply gives you a puzzle that cannot be solved. Now, asking somebody, what is the white cow of the dewy ground? What kind of metaphysical question is this? No religion will ask such a question. I am reminded of a small child who used to come to visit Picasso often, lived in the nearby neighborhood. he became very friendly with Picasso. Just 5 or 6 years old, but very daring. Seeing Picasso painting continuously, one day he also brought a paper and showed to Picasso that, look at my painting. Picasso looked at his painting and he said, my God, what is this? The boy said, it is a cow. Eating grass. Picasso said, you have defeated me. Where is the cow? The boy said, don't ask stupid questions. The cow has gone home. After eating the grass, do you think the cow will remain there? Picasso said, okay, but where is the grass? The boy said, you are absolutely unintelligent. When the cow has eaten the grass, how it can be there? It was just a plain paper that he has brought. Picasso said, I love your intelligence. You really puzzled me when you said the cow you have painted and I could not see any cow. I have been puzzling the whole world and you have puzzled me. The Zen koans are puzzles without any answer. Anzan responded by saying, mu, mu. No answer is the right answer. One has to be utterly in silence. Only silence can answer a Zen koan. But Anjan has used his mind and tried to figure out in some way to indicate what is the white cow. He has brought the mind in. Rinzai commented, you are dumb. Do you think you can deceive me by making such sounds? Can't you speak? Are you dumb? The koan needs a response. This mu won't do. Anjan said, how about you? He thought that what can be more appropriate than his answer? In fact, no answer is ever appropriate for a Zen koan. That has to be remembered. Don't look for any answer. Just look for silence. Just be utterly silent. In your silence, the master will be able to see your answer. Anzan said, how about you? If you think my answer is not right and I am dumb, Rinzai observe you animal, making the sound move, you have proved that you are still using the animal mind. In Zen, mind is an animal heritage. And unless you go beyond mind, you are not an authentic human being. Just your body is of a human being, but your mind is a very long process of 4 million years of animals. It contains all the animals you have gone through. You are not newcomers. You are old as life has existed on this earth. And you have passed through all the phases of animals. Your consciousness carries a tremendous past. When Rinzai says, you animal, he is not condemning him. He is simply stating the fact that you are still using the animal mind. Only when you are in a state of no mind, you go beyond animal. You go beyond your past. You open up to the universe. You are no more simply repeating your past heritage. Your past heritage is the heritage of all animals. His saying is not condemnatory. In Zen, there is no condemnation. People may misunderstand, but he is simply saying that you use the animal mind to figure out what will be the answer. I wanted you to go beyond the human mind, beyond the animal mind, because no mind only is the answer of every koan, of every question, of every quest. A single answer, no mind, be so silent that there is no thought at all. So it does not matter what is the koan, the answer is the same, utter silence, going beyond the animal mind. On one occasion, Rinzai asked a nun, welcome or ilkham? The nun shouted, go on, speak, cried Rinzai, taking up his stick. Again the nun shouted, Rinzai hit her. Now it will look absolutely absurd to anybody who has been brought up by a rational education, what is happening here? A nun comes, Rinzai asks her, welcome or ill-come? The nun shouted, that was not the right answer. When a man like Rinzai asks, welcome or ill-come, he is saying, if you come with the mind, you are ill-come. If you come with no mind, you are welcome. Only no mind is welcome. In the world of Zen, mind is the only thing that has to be thrown out. And then you have the whole universe available. And you are welcome by the whole universe. Just because of your mind, you are in a cage. And you are not accepted by the universe. You are not showered with flowers by the universe. Because you are a prisoner of your own thoughts in a small skull. You are a prisoner, and a prisoner cannot be welcome. Rinzai is saying, are you a prisoner? Or I should welcome you as freedom, freedom from the mind. The nun shouted. Her shout does not show that she has understood Rinzai. This is a difficulty that everything, as time passes by, becomes traditional. The shout was invented by Rinzai. But slowly, slowly it became a traditional answer. Whenever you find in a difficulty and you cannot answer, you have a traditional answer now, you can shout. But shout is not applicable everywhere. Somewhere it may be. If Rinzai has asked something which was meaningless, a good shout would have been the right answer. But what he has asked is so meaningful that you cannot respond by a shout. You have to respond by a silence. You have to show your no mind. You have to show that you are welcome. Even though the nun shouted, Rinzai said, go on, speak. Cried Rinzai, taking up his stick. Again the nun shouted. Just she has learned like a parrot. You can learn anything like a parrot, that is the difficulty. You can learn great philosophy, you can learn theology, you can learn words of great beauty, and you can repeat them without even knowing exactly their implications. Now in Zen, this became a problem. When shouting or hitting by the stick is taken as a tradition, it loses all meaning. The nun shouted, Rinzai did not take any note of it. He said, go on, speak. Are you welcome here or ill-come? He ignored her shouting. He gave her another chance. But the woman seems to be stubborn, incapable of learning. Again the nun shouted. This was too much. Rinzai took up his stick. Did not hit her because she was not worthy of a hit. She was not even able to understand a simple question. She has only learned as a ritual the shouting. She is so poor as far as consciousness is concerned, she does not deserve a hit from a man like Rinzai. In Zen, when the master hits you, it means he is showing his love and he is showing his acceptance. He is, by hitting you, giving you an indication of his approval. That is a kind of certificate. Disciples long for years to be hit by the master. It is a very different world that Zen has created. In the ordinary world, if you hit somebody, you know perfectly well what will happen. But in Zen, it is totally different. The master hits only when there is a person who deserves. The hit is a very secret approval. No outsider will understand what is going on. It is not for the outsiders. It is only for the insiders. The very few who can understand. Rinzai cried, go on, speak. But she seemed to be very stubborn. This was the time Rinzai should have hit her. But he simply cried, taking up his stick. Again the nun shouted. Now this was too much. And this hit is not of approval. This hit is against her stubbornness. So you should remember that in Zen everything is flexible. It has no certain fixed meaning. In a different situation, it may mean different. He tolerated her shouting, but finally he had to hit her. Rinzai hit her. It is not a hit of approval. It is a hit to break down her stubbornness and to bring her to her senses. That just shouting will not help. I am asking you to speak. I am asking you a direct question. Are you welcome? Do you think you deserve to be welcomed? Then show it. Your shouting does not show it. 3 times he gave her the chance. And the stick, after 3 times, is not of approval. He hits her just to bring her to her senses. Perhaps a stick, even in such circumstances, may stop her thinking for a moment. Obviously, it is going to. She was thinking that she is doing the right thing. It was the shouting invented by Rinzai himself. He introduced shouting in Zen. So she must have thought that she is doing the right thing. Rinzai is the founder of shouting. But she did not understand that shouting can be right in a situation, wrong in another situation. Here, he has not put before her any koan. His question is very simple. He is asking, are you welcome here? Do you deserve? Do you think you deserve? Because don't waste time of a man like Rinzai. First, deserve his company. And the only way to deserve the company of a Buddha is silence, utter silence. Just be. If the nun has simply touched the feet of Rinzai and sat down, that would have been the right answer. But she missed. Devices are not necessarily always successful. In life, there is no such thing that a device should always be successful, because different persons give a different context. The same device may be helpful to one person, the same device may completely fail on another occasion. Rinzai asked Lopu, up to now it has been the custom for some men to use the stick and others to give a shout. There have been masters who simply used always the stick. And Rinzai has introduced, and his disciples who have become enlightened use shouting rather than hitting. The purpose is the same. A shout is also a hit, very subtle. Perhaps goes deeper than a stick. The stick only touches your skin, may go as deep as your bones, but a shout may penetrate to the very being. Because it is an invisible force. A stick is a material, ordinary thing. It can hit the body, but it cannot hit the consciousness. So he is asking Lopu, up to now it has been the custom for some men to use the stick and others to give a shout, which comes closer to the heart of the recipient. Neither, responded Lopu. What does come close? Rinzai asked again. Lopu shouted, in his shout he is saying that shouting comes close. The master hit him. This hit is of approval, of great joy. Because shouting was the invention of Rinzai himself. And certainly shouting goes deeper. So this hit is of great approval. Lopu, you are right. Zen has a very flexible methodology. It does not give commandments for generations to be followed. It does not give general principles which are applicable in every situation to every person. It is more intimate and more personal. Rinzai used shouting, but after him, only his disciples who became enlightened continued. Finally, it disappears. the stick still continues. Because the stick is more visible, more material, and we always tend to understand the material more easily than the immaterial. A shout is an immaterial thing. But Rinzai had given a tremendous device. But it is for very intelligent people to know the difference when the shout is of approval or of disapproval. He also used the stick. Now Lopu has shouted. So giving him a shout will not be right. The master hit him. He needs a more clear-cut approval that he is right. Zen never became the religion of the majority, and it will never become. It will remain always for the chosen few, for the rare ones. Just because it does not console you by giving any opium, and it does not give you promises and hopes in the future life, it insists to remain in the present, don't move backwards or forwards. Because the present moment is the only moment you ever have been and will ever be. Whenever it is the present moment. So the past is meaningless. There is no point in studying the past scriptures. The future is irrelevant. There is no need to bother about paradise and heaven. There are such great treatises written in such detail. I entered in a temple and they had a map of their projection. The earth is in the middle, and then underneath the earth is the hell, and above the earth is heaven. And in heaven, exactly where God lives, I asked the priest who was showing it to me, and it was an ancient map, that, do you know where Timbuktu is? He said, Timbuktu? Never heard of it. I said, you don't know Timbuktu, where it is? Do you know Constantinople? He said, you are just making these names. I said, I'm not making these names. You don't know even this earth. And you think you know heaven? And you know hell? What are the grounds that you know these things? He said, I don't know. This is an old map. It is an ancient temple. I asked him, anybody else knows in your whole city? In your whole community? He said, I don't think, because I am the priest, if I don't know, nobody knows. But we believe. And that is where Zen departs from all religions. The moment you say we believe, you become undeservable of any Zen compassion. You cut off yourself from the Zen clouds which can rain and bring your potential to flowering. Never say, I believe. That is one of the greatest lies invented by men. If you know, say, I know. If you don't know, say, I don't know. Belief has no place at all in existence. What do you mean when you say, I believe? You are saying, although I don't know, but I think it must be so. But try it in ordinary life and then you will understand. Because you are using it for hypothetical things, nobody takes note of it. Tell some woman, I believe I love you. And she will give you a good slap. Believe? Either you love her or you don't love her, but what it can mean? That I believe, or perhaps I believe, that I love you. You cannot deceive any woman. A woman is so earthly. Now even Sardar Gurdayal Singh is laughing. He tries to deceive women but does not succeed much. Just look at his turban, rainbow colored. But once in a while he succeeds. There are few cuckoos around. Which no sannyasin wants to be they all give him the address of Sardar Gudiyal Singh. And with cuckoos, he manages perfectly well. Just few days before, one cuckoo's letter came that she has become enlightened. I said, it is good. You just go to Sardar Gudiyal. That is the right place and the right person to give you the recognition. Either you will make him enlightened or he will make you unenlightened. Something is bound to happen, you just go. And I heard that Sardar has made her unenlightened. She is very sad that she was sent to such a man who does not take seriously anything. He laughs at her enlightenment, and his laughter has created a doubt in her that who knows whether she is enlightened or not if Sardar Gurdayal Singh is laughing. There are always cuckoos around. They become enlightened, they become unenlightened. Ups and downs. One day they are enlightened. And you will always find such cuckoos around Sardar Gurdayal Singh. So no need to inform me. Whenever you become enlightened, just go to Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Ikkyu wrote, I almost lost my mind between studying and severe training, but life's most valuable thing really is the fisherman's sounds along the Siyao River. There's sunset and rain, cloud and moon, excellence beyond words, singing night after night. Ikku is one of the most loved haiku poets. And you can feel why he is so much loved. He is not a dreamer. He is very earthly. I almost lost my mind between studying and severe training, but life's most valuable thing really is the fisherman's songs. When he heard near the Siyao River the fisherman's songs, he is saying the fisherman's songs along the Siyao River are the most valuable thing than the holy scriptures. Because the fisherman's sons are so spontaneous, so authentic, their sunset and rain, clouds and moon, excellence beyond words, singing night after night. Haikus are to be visualized. Just visualize the great river Siau and the silent night and the fishermen singing night after night. And after each song, the silence deepens. These poems are not poems in the ordinary sense. They are pictorious, depictable. They have color. They have form. They are almost tangible. You can hear the fishermen's songs. You can hear the waves of the Siau River night after night, and the moon, and the cloud, and the rain, and the sunrise, and the sunset. All are paintings rather than poetry. And that is the difference between ordinary poetry and haiku. And ordinary poetry is a composition of words. Haiku is a very strange phenomenon. It is a painting in words, not in colors, but in words. It is a very alive thing. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, is it useful for those of us with you to try to understand what is happening in our meditation and growth and to be able to articulate it, or do we just need to watch?" Manisha, you just need to watch. The moment you start thinking what is happening, mind will come back. If you start analyzing, mind will come back. Whatever you do except watching, mind will come back. And that is the only enemy to be avoided. And watching is the only shelter in which the mind cannot enter. Your question is significant. One tends to think what is happening, and analyze it. But one is unaware of the fact that in this effort of analyzing, finding explanations, mind has come back from the back door. By watching, we are trying to get free from mind. And all other activities belong to the mind. So you need only to watch. You need only to get as deep in watching as you can. Go deeper and deeper to such an extent that mind is left miles back, and only a pure witness is there. That is your pure gold, that is your Buddha. Now it is Sardar Gurdayal Singh's time Mango, a big black gentleman, walks out of the jungle and into an African town looking for work. He hears of a job at the local factory and goes along for an interview. "You can have the job," says the white wasp. "But you must understand one thing. I don't want you to bring any friends or relatives here. I know what you jungle people are like. This job is for you only. Understand?" "Yes, I understand, boss," says Mango. "No friends, no relations. Just me, myself alone." The next morning when he arrives to start work, Mango walks through the factory gates followed by a little black pygmy. "Hey," shouts the boss, "I thought I told you. No relatives and no friends." "But boss," stammers Mango, "he is not my friend or my relative. He is my lunch." In a small village in southern Italy, Giovanni and Maria get married, but Giovanni lives in a small cottage with all his family, so the young couple have to spend their wedding night sleeping in the same room as everybody else. In the middle of the night, Giovanni and Maria start to make love. But suddenly Maria cries, "Ah, Giovanni, it hurts too much." "Really?" says Giovanni. "Okay, I will go to the cupboard and put a little olive oil on my noodle." So he gets up, steps over his father, his mother, his sister, his grandfather and grandmother, and finally gets to the cupboard. He puts a little oil on his brick and then goes back to Maria. But after a few minutes, Maria cries again, "Ah, Giovanni, remember, I am a virgin. It hurts too much." "Okay," says Giovanni, "I will put some more olive oil on my noodle." So he climbs over his father, mother, sister, grandmother, and grandfather, and puts some more oil on his prick. Then he goes back to Maria, but the same thing happens again. This time Giovanni has climbed over everyone and got to the cupboard when suddenly his grandfather sits up in bed and shouts, "Hey, Maria, go easy on the aisle. What the hell will be used for salad dressing tomorrow?" Giovanni's prick. Pope the Pollock is setting out on his Catholic pilgrimage to America. When he gets lost in the Roma International Airport, he wanders around the corridors, pushing his luggage trolley, and somehow gets on a flight to London. Arriving at London Airport in his long gown and rocket-shaped hat, the Pollock Pope walks up to the immigration desk where he is asked to fill out a form. The Pope copies all the details of his police passport and then hands the form to the official. There is one section that needs completion, says the official, eyeing the Pollock's strange clothing and pointing to the paragraph marked sex. "Ah, yes," says Pope the Pollock, "that should read twice a day." "Really?" says the official, "but I don't want to know that. What I want to know is male or female." "Ah, I see what you mean," replies the Pollock Pope with a wink. "I like both." Give it a look. Be silent. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total consciousness, with your total life energy, and with an urgency, as if this is your last moment of life. Only with such urgency you can reach to the center of your being. your center of being is also the center of the whole cosmos. At the center, we are all one. Just witness deeply. The deeper your witness, the fog disappears and you can see yourself as a Buddha. The experience of being a Buddha is the greatest experience in life. Suddenly, from all over, flowers is deeper and deeper. Let your arrow of consciousness penetrate as deep as possible. The path is small. A little courage, and suddenly you are at the center. Freed from the body, freed from the mind, you are ready to disappear in the cosmos. To be nobody is the greatest blissfulness. Nivedano, relax. And just disappear in the ocean of consciousness that is surrounding you. We are nothing but fish in the ocean. This moment, the Buddha auditorium has become a lake of consciousnesses. Without any ripples. Such joy, such peace. And the experience of your being an eternal, immortal. You have been here always, and you will be here always. There are only two ways of being here. One is in bondage, another is in freedom. Watchfulness takes you out of the prison. And opens the doors of the infinity. You are not the body. You are not the mind. You are only this witnessing consciousness. This is your freedom. This is your original face. This is the Buddha you have been searching for. You have to bring all this experience slowly, slowly to your circumference, to your daily life. In your ordinary activities, the Buddha has to be expressed. In your love, in your other relationships, in your friends, in the marketplace, sitting or walking, talking or silent, you should remember you are a Buddha. Nivedana, come back, but bring all that is at the center to the circumference. Come back as a Buddha, gracefully, peacefully, in absolute silence, and you know what Zen is. This bringing of Buddha to the surface is the whole science of Zen. To transform every being into his original face, that is the face of the Buddha, is my work. And it is your work too. The more Buddhas we have around the earth, the more the earth is protected from destructive forces. The more Buddhas we have around the earth, the more beautiful it will become. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan. Thank you. Thank you.